Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This week in PlayStation, we're talking about Horizon 3 being confirmed, what we've been playing, and your PlayStation questions answered. We'll have all this and more because this is PS I Love You XOXO. Yo, what's up? I'm Blessing. That's Janet. That's Barrett on the ones and twos. And this is PS I Love You XOXO, your weekly PlayStation podcast that you can watch live on patreon.com/kindoffunny or later on podcast services around the globe. Remember, you can use Epic Creator Code kindoffunny on all Epic Store and Epic in-game purchases like Rocket League and Fortnite to help support the channel. To be a part of the show, head to kindoffunny.com/PSILY to write in with your questions, PSN messages, and more. And remember, patreon.com/kindoffunny will get you the show ad-free, plus a bevy of bonus content. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Tripod Plus Plus and Delaney Twining. Today, we're brought to you by Rocket Money, but let's start with topic of the show. Tots.
You threw me in for a loop.
We're skipping PSN message because, Of course, topic of the show this week, we're doing your PlayStation questions answered. Greg's not here. Me and Janet are chilling. We got kind of a chill week. Of course, we got big news in the confirmation of Horizon 3, but I figure why not save that for the weekly update for PlayStation and just kick it and talk about some audience questions, because we don't do that often enough, I don't think, on the show.
Yeah, like, I don't think we've done it before, right? But I don't think I was there when we did it, if we did.
I think we might have done it like once in the era where Greg Miller was gone when he was having a kid.
I don't think so.
Because
I remember those episodes like pretty well, and I don't think it was in there. But either way, like, I love a good listener question episode. Like, they're some of my favorite things. Like, I just enjoy how the topic will go in like any direction, or like the little things that'll spin off from it. It also gives us an idea of, you know, what's on y'all's mind. Obviously, we have the show formatted to have the PSN message to get a little bit of that in every episode, but just to have one dedicated to it, I'm really excited for it.
Yeah, and Greg talks about all the time when we have topics where we want you guys to write in for, where you guys are really good about writing in with thoughtful ideas and thoughtful comments and thoughtful questions. And so I can always count on y'all to write in and actually give us bangers to talk about. And sure enough, you guys did. I tweeted out this morning that we're going to do a Q&A episode, and I put up the tweet asking you guys to write in, and you guys came through. There are so many questions, and I actually had a really fun time today compiling the most interesting and the most thoughtful ones, so me and Janet can talk about it. But before we even get there, I want to start off with my own question. Janet, right before this episode started, we were talking about the Game Awards Orchestra that's happening in June, and we were talking about like whether or not we're going to go. I have my ticket already, but I've been debating on whether or not I'm going to commit fully to it. But one of the things we talked about are the games that are going to show up at the 10-year concert. And I want to read through the games that are showing up that they're going to be playing in the orchestra. And then I want to ask you the question, if you could add one more game to the lineup to see live played by the Game Awards Orchestra, what game would you add? So the games we have already on the list are Arcane, Diablo, Elden Ring, Final Fantasy 16, God of War, Hades, Hogwarts Legacy, League of Legends, Marvel Spider-Man, Starfield, Star Wars Jedi, and The Last of Us. If you could add one more game, what game are you adding?
I know it's a PlayStation podcast, but I gotta go with something Zelda. Take your pick, even if it's just Zelda Through the Ages and kind of a compilation of a bunch of different things. I think if not that, I don't think you mentioned Final Fantasy. And while I already kind of got my fill,
there's 16.
Final Fantasy. Oh, there's 16? Okay, yeah. Cool. Because Final Fantasy is another.
Which is weird because it's not out yet, but I'll take it.
Yeah, but you know, it's like I can kind of see that being there. But yeah, I think they're both in similar camps for me. And the only time I've seen, like, have you done any like live video game music shows before? Like, have you gone to any orchestras before?
A few weeks ago, actually, for GDC, there was an orchestra playing at the Academy. I always want to call it the Academy of Sciences. That's not it. The Barrett, what's the one downtown, or in Golden Gate Park? The one that has like the nightlife.
The Botanical Garden?
I mean, the Academy of Sciences is the one in Golden Gate.
You're right. It is the Academy of Sciences. So yeah, the Academy of Sciences had their nightlife event at GDC, and they had an orchestra playing outside, and that was fun. They only had like 3 different games though. And I want to say it was Final Fantasy, Zelda, and I forget the third franchise. We actually left before the third game, but it was chill. It was cool.
Yeah, I think Zelda has the grandiosity that I'd love to see via an orchestra, because they have, I think, the combination of space for complexity and also just iconic music from the general history. And I feel like that combination is a really good one to have. Like, the only one I've gone to personally is the Final Fantasy one that just happened. I think it's called Distant Worlds. I'm seeing Omega Buster in the chat mentioning that concert as well. And yeah, I really loved that. And I don't even, like, I've only played like one Final Fantasy game, and I kind of just pulled up, like, I like music, I like games, yeah, sure, let's go. Like, it, you know, it's a cool opportunity. And I was like super moved by it. So part of me does want to go to attend it just to see like what it's like, especially because it's, I wouldn't say it's totally rare to have a show like this, but just typically when you do see orchestras, again, it's touring with a specific franchise at a given time. You don't always see like these kind of larger compilations. Obviously Game Awards is kind of known for having music incorporated throughout the show, but to have one that's dedicated, I feel like it's going to be super fun. And the people that put together those shows too always work like super hard to get together the practicing and the music, because typically it's not something that those musicians are playing that often. So when they do get into it, they're like really grinding to get it perfect. So I feel like the level is going to be really high for it if I do end up attending. I don't know. I did see it, you know, past my email, and I'm like, do I want to go? I've been kind of wanting to go to more of these things. We'll see. If y'all pull up, I'm more inclined to go, okay. Which y'all should come through to pull up, because, you know, why not?
I mean, in that case, I'll definitely keep you in the loop, because that would be an actual reason for me to go if I'm going to actually see people that I know. For me, bring up Nintendo is a good point, because I look through and there's not one Nintendo game in there. So like, I could see a Mario or a Zelda. Keeping it on the PlayStation side, you mentioned Final Fantasy. I think Final Fantasy VII in particular would be dope to have here. Like, it's cool that they have 16, right? A game that's not out yet. But when I think about Final Fantasy and soundtrack, I'm thinking about Final Fantasy VII. I think it'd be dope to have Sephiroth's theme. I think it'd be dope to have the battle theme. I think that stuff works really well in a live orchestra. I also think about what was the one I had in mind? Oh, Nier. I think Nier would be my go-to, right? I think Nier Automata for me, and Nier Replicant for that matter, have some of the best soundtracks I've ever heard, especially if you're looking for something orchestral and you're looking for something that involves choir. The soundtrack in Nier is absolutely beautiful, and is one that I would love to see live. And then I had one more, but I can't. Oh, Undertale. I'd love Undertale to show up. I think that'd be a fun one for a live orchestra.
Bonkers. Like, the complexity in the Undertale soundtrack is immense. Like, yeah. I think on that note too, you know, you think of other like iconic iconic games for soundtrack. There's, of course, you know, on the indie side, like Celeste would be an incredible one.
Chicory.
Chicory would be fun too. But like, I'm thinking too, I have like the sheet music for Celeste, like the piano sheet music, and like, man, I'm so far away from being able to play the easiest song in there, because there's like so much going on. There's so much, I think, fun with pacing too in that soundtrack. And I feel like that's something, you know, the more I start to learn the ins and out of music and orchestration and the sort of the work and the theory that goes behind it, the more I kind of appreciate what you can get out of an orchestra. That being said, you know, with something like Celeste, where so much of it is open to interpretation in terms of the pacing of the songs, like it does a lot, like a lot of the notes in that sheet music are, I forget the name for it, but basically means like out of time or like slow to like whatever time you want. So you can play a lot there. And that really is where orchestration and having like a good conductor comes in, with like having your own flavor to a composition. So I feel like that one would be really fun. And honestly, I'd be kind of down for Horizon. I feel like Horizon doesn't have the most fire soundtrack, but I do like the main theme. Like, I sing
the main theme is great.
Like, I sing that shit badly all the time in my house, and I'm like, it'd be nice to hear it done well instead of just me being like,
anyway, you nailed it there. I heard it. I heard it in the menu just now.
I've been getting the practice in, you know? And then also, too, like, who among us hasn't just, like, sat on the menu and it's like you're doing other shit before you start playing? It's like, da, 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 da. Anyway, so someone good doing that would be nice to hear.
Hell yeah, I'm all about it. All right, to start off with topic of the show, again, we're doing your questions answered. I want to start off with a question from Rolando Zuniga, who writes into kindoffunny.com/PSILY, just like you can, and says, what are the top five underrated PS5 games to check out? We always get a top five, or we always get a top X list to check out, but with so much to play, a lot goes under the radar. I appreciate what you guys do, and keep crushing it in all you do. Janet, are there any games that come to mind when you think about the top five underrated games to check out on PS5?
Yeah, obviously top five implies that it's like, you know, again, the top five, like the idea of me finding the pinnacle of underrated in terms of quality and not being known. Rather than doing that, I'm just going to scroll down my list and kind of name the ones that I don't hear talked about that I really enjoyed. Caveat that some of these I haven't beaten, so it's like, oh, maybe it falls apart later. But Heavenly Bodies, it's a co-op space game. Physics-based, but not so wonky that you can't totally control it to some degree. I played this with Isaiah probably like freaking, I don't know, 2+ years ago. I think the art is really charming, and just like what you're doing maneuvering around the ship and kind of having these different objectives. You know, if you're watching the video version, Barrett has the gameplay, the trailer stuff pulled up. There's a lot of fun with movement in it. And it's kind of got like this puzzly aspect to it too, where you're like problem solving, but also like tackling these objectives. So I really like that one. Again, I'm trying to think of ones that are not as well known. So it isn't just like, oh, it's the title that we always talk about, but not if people played. But honestly, I kind of really vibe with Solar Ash as well. Again, I'm a lot of kind of spacey, whimsical vibes, but I enjoy that game for, which we actually should save this for like what game is just okay that you really like. But I just really like skating around and moving in that game. I feel like it has a beauty to it that you can get kind of lost in. And that's personally how I approach playing that one. So, you know, that one comes to mind. You know, you and I always talk about Hot Wheels Unleashed again.
Oh, that's a really good one.
Pretty known title. Like, I do want to try to find like more of the in the weeds ones that y'all maybe haven't heard about. But Hot Wheels Unleashed, I feel like, went by and never really got as appreciated as it should have been. And there are flaws in that game. I do think it's a little too difficult. And then the easy is like a little too easy. So I think that I would love to see the difficulty a little bit more fine-tuned or more nuanced in there. But I mean, striking, fun, challenging, interesting races. Like it controls really well. I think it really manages the arcadiness with needing to have some skill level to get through it. You know, of course, you and I always talk about Operation Tango. Yep. That'd be my third pick. Again, that one, I feel like if y'all have been listening to the show, you know Operation Tango, but I feel like not enough people have checked that out. And the more we get these kind of bigger, I guess like marketing, like more attention, co-op games, the more I look back at Operation Tango and think about how much it nailed it. You know what I mean? And
oh,
like
100%.
I love Skate Academy as well, but Operation Tango, like, it's like, that keeps me up at night.
It's weird because,
I mean?
Like, Operation Tango is one where when I think about my time playing it, I sometimes think about, like, oh, yeah, well, it was a small game. Like, you know, it didn't have, like, the biggest production behind it. But then I think about my time playing that game with Yami and, like, having, like, our back and forth and us doing different things at the same time. And I've not been able to recapture that feeling of playing Operation Tango since. Even in a game like Escape Academy, which I really enjoy Escape Academy, Operation Tango, I think, had something to it just in the fact that it was designed to be played online and you and your co-op partner looking at different things, doing entirely different activities that are interacting with each other at the same time. I think Operation Tango nailed that on a different level that I've not really seen a lot of games get as right.
Yeah, I think it's because it's so prescriptive, yet like it opens up a lot of opportunity for communication and by that extension miscommunication.
Yeah.
While also giving you like interesting tasks to do where it's not like you're simply, I mean, a lot of the puzzles are like, tell me what you see here. You know, it is relaying information, but it doesn't feel like you're totally just waiting to input information. And again, some puzzles are a little bit more like, you tell me that it looks like a sun and I put the thing in the dial or whatever. But so often you're doing something else. I think too, it's unique in that it was almost impossible for me to really know what Isaiah was doing when I was playing. You know, when you play two roles, you can flip them. But there were times where there were puzzles I'd encounter, and I'm like, I'm telling you information. We're getting through the puzzle. We're doing it. I have no idea what you're looking at. I'm just kind of going with it. There's a little bit of, I think, trust and levity to that. That's really fun. And the last two I'll shout out are Little Nightmares 2. Again, I feel like indie sequels often get swept under the rug. I think this improved on everything the first one did. Super fun, really spooky. Stories a little bit, not my favorite. I just feel like it's a little vague, but I really love that game. I feel like it came out and no one really talked about it, but I, you know, stand that really hard when the year it came out. And then Maquette as well. I do think it gets a little bit of flack for not being as interesting as other puzzle perspective games, but I think it's still really good. And I enjoyed the story quite a bit. And I think it does story better than, not better than most games, but in most of the games of that type. But it had a more direct emotional layer to the story, while usually, you know, something like Superliminal, it's like there is a story, but it's kind of like you're just in a weird spot. Maquette was very much like
it's more grounded and relatable.
Yes, it's a perspective puzzle game about relationships, and I think there was something beautiful in both the presentation and the kind of diorama quaintness to it, and also the idea of what is it like to meet someone, fall in love, and have that relationship evolve, and maybe to a degree also fall apart. And how can that be sort of represented through space, and how does space evoke a sense of time for you, you know? And I feel like people, it doesn't get enough credit for doing that. I think there was something so cool and intimate about that, and I think it's so challenging to create that level of intimacy in a puzzle game. So those are my five underrated games that I'd like to highlight. But what about you? What do you got? I already see your list, and I got some of them ready to co-sign, so I'm excited to hear what you got.
Yeah, firstly, I hope we never stop seeing puzzle games like Maquette, because for me that's one of my low-key favorite genres, like the first person weird perspective puzzle games, where, you know, like you take a key, you put it somewhere, and all of a sudden it's a different size, or like you have to line up things based on how you're looking at them. Like I'm talking about Maquette, I'm talking about Superliminal, I'm talking about Manifold Garden. There was one Anti-Chamber. Viewfinder's coming out soon. I think that's gonna be the next up, and I'm hoping that it hits even more than the ones that I just mentioned, because I think a lot of these games have the tendency to come and go, because none of them have that staying power that Portal does. Like, I think Portal was the early one to come out and be like, damn, this game nailed what it was going for completely. And the concept of it, the idea of it is so smart, and it works so perfectly that it's entirely impossible to top Portal. But I love seeing other people, other developers figure out their own takes, their own spins on it. And yeah, I love seeing a game like Maquette be like, cool, let's do this, but let's add an emotional angle, and let's add in this story about relationships and actually make it this thing that is very heartwarming. And so shout out to Maquette. The games that I have here, because I wrote mine down, first off, The Pathless. You know, you mentioned Solar Ash, and shout out to Solar Ash. The Pathless is like kind of like my Solar Ash, where I played Solar Ash, and the whole time I was like, okay, this is cool, but it's no Pathless to me. Like, Pathless was the one that I played, and I was like, oh, this is it. Of course, this was a PlayStation 5 launch title. It's one of my favorite launch titles from the PS5, if not probably my favorite launch title if I sit down and really think about it. I mean, one of the things I love about it the most, honestly, is it invokes so much Shadow of Colossus in it, and like in its ethos, right? And like its world design and its tone, and like how serene the world is, how kind of like, you know, empty, and like how much the world goes for, hey, there was a society here that like something happened, and you are going through and you're kind of like getting the story of this land while also encountering creatures and encountering puzzles and all this stuff. It's like, it's a me-ass type of game, but also it's a game that I would say is very beautiful. Having this game be the first games I got to play on PS5 in performance mode really helped me see performance mode shine, and really cement the fact that, oh, this is how I'm going to play games now, because this game, the locomotion in it is very fast and fluid. You are hitting these talismans in the air as you're running through the land, and the talismans allow you to like pick up speed. And playing that way, and also having the fluidity of 60 FPS and all the tech stuff that goes behind it, and like also how cool the visuals and the art style looks, right? How high contrast and how colorful everything is, really hit with me. I was like, dude, this game is fantastic, and more people should be talking about it, and I still feel that. So shout out to The Pathless. Another one that I talk about in terms of an underrated game is The Forgotten City. I talk about it a lot, and I have talked about it a lot since the game came out, but man, like, you want to talk about a game that brought me back to the things I really like about the Bethesda RPGs, while also being this concise narrative story that, you know, is also kind of this detective tale. We are talking to all the characters, trying to figure out what the routines are. The whole premise of it, of course, is that, like, you end up in this, you know, weird world that is, like, you're in the Forgotten City. You're in this kind of, like, fallen kingdom where people can't really make it out, and you come across
it's a Roman city stuck in time.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, right? Yeah, like a Roman city stuck in time, and then you come across the golden rule, which is essentially you cannot commit sin in this world, right? Like, if you do that, the whole world is fucked, right? Like, if you fuck up the golden rule, you're fucking up society. But then that, like, then feeds in with these time loop mechanics that then allow you to restart the world in this really cool way. And I think the thing I love about the most is that because of how small and how focused it is in terms of these are the characters, this is the world, it's all very walkable, it's all very, like, condensed, they're able to do a lot with the depth of the story and how they explore the like its themes. Like, it goes deep into the themes of morality and all that stuff. And so, absolutely adored this game. I think the characters are fantastic, and yeah, I think the story is very entertaining. So shout out to Forgotten City. Near Replicant is my third one. Fucking love Near Replicant. And of course, you know, this is coming off of me also loving Nier Automata, but Nier Replicant was one that I was curious about because, you know, Nier Automata is such a, oh man, okay, this is the one that came through and really opened people's eyes to Nier, right? Before, it was just the nerds that knew about Nier Replicant. But then coming into Nier Replicant after playing Nier Automata, I was surprised by how much the story hit in terms of, like, in terms of characters, in terms of formatting an action RPG in a way where I just couldn't stop playing. And they do the similar thing that Nier Automata does, which is, hey, you got to play through certain story beats multiple times to really get everything that the game is offering you in terms of narrative in the characters. And doing that unveils, like, different moments and different things that the story does. And I fucking loved it. And again, I fucking love the music of it, the style of it. Yeah, Nier Replicant, I would say, is a very special game, and I want more people to check it out. And so that's my number three. Number four.
What order do you recommend people take that in? Like, if I wanted to play Nier, should I play Replicant first? Should I, like, does it not matter? Like, what should be the entry point?
It's funny because Nier Replicant takes place technically before Nier Automata, but I would say check out Nier Automata first. Like, I still put Nier Automata above Nier Replicant in terms of which I like better. And also Nier Automata, I think, is probably just easier to get into, right? Like,
sure.
I think the mechs of Nier Automata are really cool. I think the world building and the story stuff there is a bit more engaging. So I think Nier Automata might be easier to get into. And then once you get around to Nier Replicant, I think having Nier Automata set the stage eases you into to Nier Replicant.
Because especially with, like, the lore that's introduced in Automata, and granted, I've beaten neither of these games. Like, both of these games should be extremely my shit, especially with, like, how much Replicant feels like Ocarina of Time in a lot of specific ways.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, from what I remember of, like, they're in the same world, but, like, they're so far apart, it doesn't really matter. But I would agree with Bless, just, like, the setting of Automata, I think, is a little bit more interesting for people to get into. And then if you're interested in the lore and the backstory of this world, I think Replicant does a solid job of, like, fleshing that stuff out.
1,000%. But fourth game is Clang 2. Clang 2, it's funny, I was just playing this game last night. It's such a... this is a game that found its way in my email. I saw it through a press email about, like, a year or so ago. And I was like, what is Clang 2? And I read the description, and the description was like, hey, Clang 2 is a rhythm action game that, like, features, like, this cool, weird neon world. I'm like, this seems dope as hell. And I started playing, and I was like, this is fucking dope as hell. It's basically a rhythm game, and you're playing this game with two buttons, pretty much, right? Like, you're using your analog stick to rotate around the cursor, and then you're pressing square to then, like, keep up with the rhythm aspects. And when you look at it, it kind of looks like a 2D action platformer, but it plays completely like a rhythm game. Like, you're not really controlling the character. The character is just, like, going as the beat in the song is playing. But it's, like, super fast, super fun, dope-ass music, dope-ass visuals, and it's a short game. Like, I beat this in the span of, what, like, 3 hours? Or so. It's a pretty concise game, but I had a really fun time with it. And so if you're somebody who's just looking for a rhythm game and you're like, oh, I want some dope music, I want to get into the rhythm, Clang 2 for sure. And then, of course, shout out Sackboy: A Big Adventure. This is one that I feel like me and you talk about all the time now. But when you're talking about the launch lineup of the PS5, it's one that gets dismissed a lot as a launch game. And I'm like, no, man, this is a real good 3D platformer. Like, Sackboy: A Big Adventure has the stuff. I really love the music levels. I really love I love the shift in general, right? Because they're going for a Mario 3D world style game. And I think, I would say, they find their own identity with it and they find their own flow with it and make it their own in a way that I appreciate. So shout out to Sackboy: A Big Adventure. And then a bonus one I'll throw out there is Prey. It's not a PS5 game. It's technically a PS4 game. And if anything, I'd also say, like, play this one on Xbox Series X because of the FPS boost. But it's a game that I'll say is super underrated that I wish more people would talk about because this game is fucking rad. When I played it last year, maybe it was about 2 years ago, I was blown away. I was like, dude, this game is way better than y'all give it credit for. Of course, an arcane game from Arcane Austin, who's about to put out Redfall. But I'll leave XCast to talk about all that. But yeah, Prey is dope as hell. And so if you have the time, definitely pick it up and play it, even on PlayStation 5 if you want to.
Yeah, I've been meaning to. I'm a little bit intimidated because it's a little scary, right?
Yes, it is. It's very scary. That's honestly.
Scary.
No,
it's very scary.
Tormenting to the point that I couldn't keep playing because the idea of the mimics is just absolutely awful.
Yeah, I really want to try it out though. Everyone says it's like hot fire. Like I've been hearing about it since it came out. About how, but also oddly enough, like it's one of those games that gets a lot of love. But one of the reasons is the same reason you're mentioning it now, which is like it's still not loved enough. You know what I mean? Like
people
that love
it
really
love
it like to. Yeah, like the people that love it are championing it, so that's why I know about it. But it definitely is like kind of didn't really get as much of its due as I think it could have, except for like the I don't know. The deep cut content. Yeah. Like I'm sure Waypoint was like hyping this game up. You know what I mean? Like it was
That's the thing. This is an Arcane game that is for people who fucking love Arcane games. Like it is everything you want out of that type of game in this cool sci-fi horror setting. And yeah, like the mimics are like if you're somehow not familiar with like the premise of Prey, right? Like you're in the space station, and like you're playing like this first person stealth slash shooter kind of game, right? Think like something like Dishonored. But the enemies in the game, the mimics, are basically able to enter different objects in the world. So you'll just be hanging out in a room and you'll look at a cup. And you're like, oh, what's up with that cup? That cup is kind of moving, kind of weird. And why is that cup moving? And then, like, out from it hops out a mimic that you'll then fight. It's fucking awesome. It's fucking great. And then, yeah, there's, like, just so many immersive sim elements. You can really choose and dictate the way you play, right? Whether you want to, like, double down on certain types of abilities versus other abilities. There's a lot of choice. And, yeah, like, I think anybody or everybody should check out Prey.
I've been saving it for like a Halloween stream. Like I also have this dream. I don't know if I'll ever do it because it's so much work and I don't know how I'm going to make the time in my schedule to be able to do it, especially because fall is always like a hot time for games. So I imagine October would be just as busy as any other review season. But I would love to do like a 30 days or maybe just 30 days, but like only Monday through Friday of like horror or horror adjacent games like on Twitch and I've been saving Prey for that non-existent event. But like any year this is going to happen. So we'll see when I get around to it.
Our next question comes from BanderSN, who writes in the kindoffunny.com/PSILY and says, expand alone versus DLC. I just finished up Burning Shores this week and really enjoyed it as a smaller Horizon experience. It almost felt like a Horizon expand alone with how important it is for the story and how big the final boss was. My question for discussion is, what do we prefer when it comes to additional content and franchises? Expandalones like Lost Legacy and Miles Morales, or big story critical DLC like Burning Shores, Iki Island, and FF7 Intergrade? Are the expectations different? Does marketing game as an expandalone naturally make it feel more important? Could Burning Shores have been an expandalone or Lost Legacy have been a DLC? Janet, what do you think?
I feel like I haven't gotten to Lost Legacy yet. It's on the list. I've finished the Uncharted games, but I do want to hit up Lost Legacy just to really, you know, dot my I's and cross my T's. I'm not going to do the PSP, the PS Vita thing, though. That's too far, you know. But I will be hitting that up at some point. A lot of people tell me Lost Legacy is the best Uncharted. I feel like that's become a little bit more of a popular take as the years have gone on. Maybe it's just my circles. I don't know. I probably prefer DLC in a sense, just because I think with the expand alone thing, I think the fact that like Lost Legacy and Miles Morales are even in here for that, while Miles Morales is very much like, no, this is its own Spider-Man game, but also not enough to be Spider-Man 2. Spider-Man 2 is coming out this year. You know what I mean? It's like in this weird spot. And I feel like from based on like the aspect of the question with the like, our expectations different, like, does it kind of like, how does it affect the conversation around the game? I feel like Miles Morales has been rough because it's so good, but like no one fully cares because it felt like we weren't supposed to. And I feel like that sucks for a lot of reasons. One, it's an incredible game, especially now that I'm doing the trophy hunt on it. The more I play that game, the more I appreciate what it's doing and feel like I kind of slept on it low key. I know we meme that like, oh, blessing is Miles Morales. But honestly, I played that and was like, yeah, it's great. But like, I didn't really care about the details as to why it's great, and the more time I spend with it, the more I appreciate it. But I think so much of the scope of it did end up doing it a disservice because people can't help but kind of put it in that bucket, even though it's not really supposed to be there. So I feel like with DLC, it's kind of like, all right, it's not, I wouldn't say an automatic win, because you can still make whack DLC or DLC that doesn't feel, you know, worth the price or all these different aspects or that undercuts the story. Like, there are ways to do DLC wrong. But for the most part, it's like, if it's good, that's great. While these expand alone examples, I think, end up getting stuck in no one believes that it's as good as it is because of what it is, if that makes sense. And I'm getting a little conspiracy theory-ish with it, but you know what I mean? There's like a vibe
I think there's
to Lost Legacy and Miles. It's like a stigma attached to them because of the scope of their game.
Yeah, I think people tend to look at like the $40 game is not as, oh, this is as premium as the mainline thing, right? Which like changes what your expectation and changes how you receive them. But to the question of, you know, are expectations different? Yeah, I think expectations are different. And I think the way you market and package these things do matter. And I like the separation of DLC and expand alone. And I like what those things do individually. If Uncharted Lost Legacy was a DLC to Uncharted 4, it would be considered the best DLC of all time. Because it is a full-ass video game.
Yeah, it's a full other game.
Yeah, it's a full-ass video game. You're getting a lot of hours out of that thing. You're getting a full-fledged story with a beginning, middle, and end.
And I think at the time, like, people felt like it was comparatively short just because Uncharted 4 was longer. But, like,
yeah,
it's roughly the time, like, the...
It's, like, Uncharted 2 size.
Uncharted 1, I would say. But, yeah, like, around that, like, the original trilogy, for sure.
Yeah, like, that is a good amount of game that you're getting. And it's a great game. And, yeah, like, to your point, Janet, like, a handful of people would say Lost Legacy is their favorite. I'm one of those people. I really liked Lost Legacy, even compared to the other Uncharted games. And so, yeah, I think having that be a standalone thing, having that be a what you'd call an expand alone, I think works for it. And I'll even say the same thing about Miles Morales. Like, I think it is the balance of what do you do with that time. Like, I think it's okay for games to be shorter. It's okay to have a first or a single-player PlayStation Studios game that is 7 hours long, 10 hours long, 13 hours long. What are you doing with that time? I think that is the thing that matters. And then also, how do you market it to the audience? And I think PlayStation's done a pretty good job of being like, hey, this is $40 or this is $50, right? This is $60, however they're pricing it out to make sure you know that this is we're not putting this on the level of the mainline game where you got all this content, where you got all this stuff. And people might feel like either way about that, but I think the fact that they're giving that range of price while also being like, but no, you should care about this, I think works in terms of how they're selling it. How people receive it critically and all that stuff is going to be another thing. I think we do a good job of managing those expectations. Lost Legacy, I think, does get lost in the shuffle, no pun intended. But if I look at reviews for Lost Legacy, like, I think that game still got pretty good reviews. Maybe not as high as Uncharted 4, but I think that, again, comes with, you know, the amount of content, the amount of game we're getting out of Uncharted 4 versus Lost Legacy.
It came in a busy year, too. That was 2017, from what I remember. So that was, we're in the middle of Breath of the Wild and anticipating Mario and all that stuff. So,
and on the flip side, for Horizon, right, I'm coming off of Horizon Forbidden West Burning Shores, and I really enjoyed it. If that was an expand alone, if that was a standalone game, and PlayStation's like, hey, pay $50 or like pay like a standalone price for this video game that you're getting separate from Horizon, I'd be disappointed in it, because it's mechanically and in terms of how the game functions, it is completely Horizon Forbidden West because it's DLC, right? Like, in terms of new content, you're getting new story content, you're getting a new area, you're getting new quests, you're getting like one or two new enemies, right, in terms of machines that you're fighting, and then you're getting like, of course, the human enemies. But like, it plays and functions as DLC because it is more closer to the base game that it's based out of. I think once you get out of that, I think it is all about scope, right? Lost Legacy, Miles Morales, these are things that had way more scope than something like Iki Island or something like Burning Shores, and it makes sense to spin those off, especially because you can treat that as a moment. I'm somebody, and I've talked about it before, that DLC for me is very much hit or miss in terms of whether I care enough to get back to it. Usually I'm like, I don't want to come back to this game a year later.
Yeah, same.
A lot of these games, if they're marketed as a standalone, pushed as a standalone thing, I think it's just easier to get excited, right? It's easier for me to be like, oh shit, a new Uncharted game. Oh shit, a new, you know, Horizon game or whatever the thing is, right? I think that's why we talk about, when we were talking about God of War Ragnarok and they announced it so soon, a lot of us were like, yeah, what if this is an expand alone? Like, what if this is what Miles Morales was? Because the idea of getting those things faster and having here's a quick hit of a full game, I think that's just an exciting way to do it. But I think PlayStation and their studios have done a good job of figuring out where that fits when. Like, I like that we're kind of getting the half and half of DLC versus expand alone. Our next question comes from Emmett Watkins Jr., who writes in and says, what is the middest games that you love? And to make it harder, Bless can't say Sonic Frontiers.
Would you wouldn't couch Sonic Frontiers as mid, though, anyway, right?
How do we define mid? Because I've always seen mid as, like, average.
I see mid as, like, middling, as in You know, like this is like really, it, I feel like almost a little bit lower than that, where okay. it's like, it's not good enough for you to say like, oh, you know, it's because, so here's the thing, like zooming out kind of quickly, there's a conversation of like the idea of a 7 out of 10 game. And it's interesting because a 7 out of 10 is good on most 1 to 10 scales. It is quite literally labeled as a good video game. But I think the reason, kind of rightfully so, that a lot of consumers and even to a degree critics kind of say, oh, it's just a 7 out of 10. And there's that disconnect of, well, I thought 7 out of 10 is good. Like, isn't it good? It is, but 7 out of 10 feels very much like I technically have to look at this and admit that it is good, but I wasn't like wowed
I wasn't
by
wowed
it.
It by
didn't
it
didn't pack that punch to get to great. It's kind of like, you know, you can get a B on a lot of things you turn in, but when you really think about that work that went into it, like, was it, did you really do a good job, or did you just do the assignment and technically you show that you have the skill to do these whatever things, right? So
see, that that's a C grade to me, not a B grade. But I also, you're the teacher,
I think the line's fine though, because I think yeah. and that's why you see a lot of those games that are 7 out of 10 games might have a couple sixes in there. You know, some people are like, this isn't good, it's just okay. So I think it just sort of depends, you know what I mean? Like, but that's why I think there is that association with 7 out of 10 being kind of like whatever, because it's like you're barely good, I guess. If I really have to like put you somewhere, maybe I would put you somewhere else depending on the critic or whatever. So back to the question of what is mid, I feel like mid is like, I could see why someone would give this like it might be why someone could give it like a 5 or a 6. Mm-hmm. It's like a 5 or a 6.
I would say I can
like,
feel
I think
a little
Gotham
bit
Knights
of that.
Is mid, where I it's think... not like it's not bad. Well, actually, it's kind of bad. I don't know, but it's like it's something that's like, oh, this is, I don't know. It's
feeling weird because
it's mid as fuck. Like
for
right?
me,
like,
for me, there's a context to Sonic Frontiers where I can see why somebody would give it a 6 or even a 5, right? Like I might disagree with a 5, but I can see how somebody would get there, but. Because of what Sonic has been, for me, Sonic Frontiers is a step forward, right? It's a step sure. in the right direction. And so I wouldn't call it mid based on what Sonic has been. I'd be like, oh, yeah, no, this is great. But if I was comparing Sonic Frontiers to like a 10 out of 10 game, then I'd be like, oh, yeah, it's mid, right? It's kind of a weird thing.
I think
contextual.
I didn't play a lot of Sonic Frontiers, but from what I played, I wouldn't say it's, I probably would give it like, you know, like a 6 out of 10 or something. It's not quite mid because I think it's, it does too many things really well and too many things really badly to be mid. Because that's another thing, too. I feel like mid is, like, it's not even that, like, you fucked up. It's just that, like, it didn't quite come together. So now I'm actually questioning what I wrote down here. Because when I first thought of a mid game I love, I thought of Serial Cleaners. Because that's a game that, critically, I would maybe say is, like, a 6 out of 10. Like, it's okay. But I fuck with that game so heavy. But then I'm like, maybe it should be lower than that. So then I'm thinking Clive and Wrench. But I'm like, Clive and Wrench is kind of low-key bad. So maybe it's hard to find, like, that perfect middle ground of those. But those are the two that I kind of throw out there for... You know, Serial Cleaners, I would say, is more like a 6, and Clive and Wrench is probably like a 5. So like that kind of gives you a sense. But yeah. to dig into like the why I love these games. So Serial Cleaners, again, I would couch that more as just okay. It is a game where you are a cleaning crew. It is the sequel to Serial Cleaner, and the sequel just has an S. It was, you know, mistakes
That's
were made.
That's a
okay?
terrible naming scheme.
I know. Mistakes are made. But, you know, take a walk with me, because I fuck with Serial Cleaners heavy. It's top-down stealth action where you are a group of cleaners and you clean up for the mob. So basically, like, you're going to these little rooms or, like, these buildings and you're trying to evade, like, the cops and whoever else might, like, catch you cleaning up because you're, like, going in, you're, like, cleaning up blood or you're destroying evidence. And there's something just really... charming about, I think, the premise of it and just the act of kind of a basic stealth system. It's like, this stealth system's not gonna wow anybody. It's kind of just getting the job done, but I enjoy walking around. There's a simplicity and a quaintness to Serial Cleaners, and also I'm just a big fan of like cleaning in a video game, like the idea of a really rote, repetitive task. That's what Serial Cleaners kind of offers. And the different, I haven't beaten it yet, but the different like cleaners have different skill sets. So like one of them is like a graffiti artist and they can like tag up a spot and the cops will go to where they tag. So you're like walking around doing these different things, setting up like, you know, it's the kind of game where you're like, oh, click this and the alarm will go. And then you're like loop around. And I think it has like a pretty nice save system throughout it too, where you're kind of slowly working. So what I really like about this is just again, the quaintness and the meticulousness, and it's kind of just a game that you can like sink into. And it does hit, the reason I thought of it for that mid thing is it is a game where you're kind of just going through the motions in a sense, but the motions I'm going through I really like. And then Clive and Wrench, this borders on bad. This is a mascot I have been dying to talk about this game, and I'm hoping to beat it so I can really give a full thought. This is a 3D platformer where you're playing as a rabbit and you have a wrench. So very much, it's very much like Banjo-Kazooie energy. But it, let's see, what is the thing that sucks about this game is that it's just kind of like, it's like a little rough around the edges. And it's one of those things where it feels like you took a lot of ideas and you kind of just smattered them all together. And you're like, this is a good time, right? And it's a good time for me because I fuck with platformers heavy. So like I'm spinning around. I think the mechanics are surprisingly deep with the fact that you can like jump and then you take your little like, I don't know, you have like a monkey on your back. Like he's your like your little buddy. You're a rabbit. You have a monkey. Like, why are they together? Like, again, lots of reasons this ends up becoming a middling experience, but you can like whip them and do a little like hover thing. You go into different areas. Like it's the kind of game where if you're not a platformer stan, you probably will really hate it and also feel like it's not quite well designed enough to pull off the jumps. But if you're a platformer stan and you're good at platformers, you're like, oh, I can get by on this. I can ride this out. So I like it for the hodgepodge of platforming mechanics and just the fact that a bad platformer is still kind of good to me because I fuck with the genre heavy. Again, I can acknowledge that's not a good game and I wouldn't like recommend it widespread. But if you're like me and you're plagued by the like the platforming thirst, because there's not a lot of platformers out there, I'm like, yeah, if you're making a little, I need you a lot. So those are my mid games that I fuck with heavy. What about you? What comes to mind for this?
Yeah, I think the idea of, hey, this, I can admit that this game isn't great, but it's in a genre that I fuck with heavy, and so I love it more than I probably should. I relate to that a lot, right? And so for me, I look at Stranger of Paradise, Final Fantasy Origin, that came out last year, as one of those where that game has so much wrong with it. It looks ugly a lot of the time. The characters are so bland, the writing is so bad sometimes that it's actually pretty funny. And like the plot, the moment to moment of it, it's like, what is going on? The enemy design can be generic sometimes, but that said, playing that game in action for me was just so fun that I didn't care about any of that. If I was to give it a score, it would not be a high score, right? Like I wouldn't be like, oh yeah, this game is an 8 or something, but it's a game that I still have fun with, and is a game that I'll still probably recommend if you're like a fucking hardcore Final Fantasy fan, or you're somebody who's hardcore into action games, and especially like action games from this team. If you're somebody who loves Neo, or you love like a game like Wolong, then I'd be like, yeah, sure, check out Stranger of Paradise. But it's a game where all of its wrapping, all of its elements put together, I'm like, dude, this, the sum of its parts is so whack, but playing it, enjoying the combat, enjoying the ridiculousness of it also, whether intentional or not, it is just a good time to me. I genuinely love that game. The other one I'll throw in here is Bloodshore, and I would also loop in a lot of the FMV, like Wales Interactive games. I feel bad looping all of them in here because I wouldn't say all the games are mid. I think they do have a
play
range.
Play Late Shift. You still have to it's play it. I'm so tired. Every week I show up here to have my heart broken.
Legitimately, I was you talking know? To you. When I was playing, I played 10 Dates with Yami, which is one of their games.
Don't even do this to me. Just, you know,
but it just came out. It's new. It's new. So we had to play the new video game. But I was like, we got to move Late Shift up on the list because I got to play this game for Janet. It's on my mind. But also, I got to play Who Pressed Mute on Uncle Marcus because I got to figure out what the fuck that game is about. But these games are so fucking.
You know what? I'll let that one pass because the name is really funny. So
yeah, and the premise is really fun as well. But yeah, like Bloodshore being one of those games was the battle royale one where it's a bunch of influencers land on an island and it's an FMV game where you're making choices and you're trying to survive in this real life battle royale. And it's so campy. It's so B movie. If not, is there like below B movie? Is there C movie? Oh, yeah. It's C
sure.
movie.
We got plenty of letters. Take your
pick. It might be D movie, honestly. It's so low. It's so low on that spectrum, but it is enjoyable. And again, similar to Stranger Paradise, I like the camp. I think it's fun in the way that oftentimes watching a bad movie can be fun, right? If it's ridiculous enough. But then other times for Wales Interactive, just shoot them some bail. They do have their hits. They do have ones where I'm like, oh, this is fun. I really like 5 Dates. I really like 10 Dates. I think those games are great. I really want to play Late Shift. But then I play something like The Complex and I'm like, dude, this is rough, dude. This story, I do not care about it at all. But I, regardless, I'm going to keep playing their games because I enjoy it, like regardless if it's mid or not. So yeah, shout out to my guys, Wales Interactive. Next question we got is from Anthony Corbett, who says, Janet, bless. What games do you want from the next phase of PlayStation? Also, why can't we get Naughty Dog to make a small sub team to work on that Jack 4 game? We need it. Janet and I need it. LOL.
I don't know if I need it, to be honest. Again, I'd be hyped if it came out because it's like, we're here now. Let's ride. But I don't know what that would look like. You know what I mean? I think if anything, like, it would be really cool to get 2 and 3 remade specifically, or have the collection remade, which, again, is kind of a heavy lift. There's 3 fucking games. It's like kind of a lot. But I still, as much as I started replaying 2 and realized that actually everyone was right a million years ago, this game isn't that good. You know, I see the vision, though. I'm like, just put a strafe in there, a couple. And again, it's not easy things to do, but like a couple quick mechanical updates, and we got a pretty good game here on our hands. So I would love to see something like that, actually, because then I could live the game that I thought I played initially, kind of thing. You know, my fantasy can be a reality. But I think, obviously, definitely want to see more from the Naughty Dog team. We talk about it all the time, but more from, oh my God, why am I blanking? The Astro people.
Oh, Team Asobi.
Thank you. Yeah, Team Asobi. And, you know, I'm down for Astrobot, not VR. I'm down for Astrobot in VR. I'm also down for not Astrobot. I feel like they've shown that they are such a talented team that obviously my ideal would be them making a platformer, even if it's not Astro. But man, if they want to make something that's not even a platformer, like, I trust the creativity that they have, and they've done enough, like, dope stuff that I'm like, you know what? Whatever has your, you know, there's a few studios that are like this, you know, I'd love to hear the ones that are like this for you, but there are a few teams where it's like, whatever you're putting out there, like a logo of something I've never heard of, and I'm like, I'm gonna ride with it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm interested, I'm intrigued. Will it actually deliver? That's a different conversation. But in terms of who would I love to see more projects for, that's definitely, those are the two, like, kind of at the top of my list. But what about you? The next phase, what phase is this? Phase two.
Yeah, I think we're calling it phase two. I want to see more multiplayer games. I want to see some of those multiplayer projects that you've been working on. I'd love to see something from Bungie. I'd love to see something from the Firewalk studio that they just acquired. I think that would be really cool to start getting those in there to define what PlayStation's multiplayer output looks like. Haven Studios, what are they working on? But like, in terms of like the PlayStation stars, right?
Not to be confused with PlayStation stars.
I want to see Ghost of Tsushima 2. I want that to be like the end cap of phase two. I want that to be like the, okay, here we go. Like, we're going back. We were just in Iki Island. Now we're back on the proper island of Tsushima or whatever other island. I forget what Greg's whole theory was. But like, yeah, show me more of that. I would love to see that. And I'd also love to see them maybe put out something multiplayer, because they have like the hirings that, or they're bringing people on to work on multiplayer stuff. And I hope it's more Legends. I think that'd be cool. What is London Studio working on? You know, like, they had the reveal of the concept art of them working on a fantasy game in London. I think it'd be really cool to get an actual trailer of that to see what it looks like in action. I want the Horizon multiplayer game as well.
I forgot about that. As a expand alone. Like,
yeah.
I feel like the, you know, putting in the core game is a little risky. I talked about this a bit on Games Daily with Mike, just because having played games where they're like, no, I promise it'll be great alone and great with friends, I'm like, yeah, I really need my friends for like a number of reasons. Like, so many times I've had that response playing those games, and I would hate for Horizon to fall into that. So I love the idea of a expand alone thing, or a separate mode, or some type of something that kind of like you can have your cake and eat it too. I think also too, one thing I'd love to see is the redemption. Sounds a little dramatic, but the redemption of Ben Studio. I want to see them put out a project and people be like, you know what, they got it, you know, they put it together. Yeah, like, it doesn't have to be, you know, to me, like a 10 or even a 9. I think a really strong 8, something that really moves the studio from like a critical standpoint on the upward trajectory, because again, they had a base with some of those elements in Days Gone, and I feel like, while, you know, they're going to be working on something totally different, I believe that this team can make that game, that level of a game, and I want to see it from them. And I think it'd be such a nice way to bring them more into the fold. And when we talk about who are, right, the PlayStation stars, well, I don't see them ever quite reaching like that Naughty Dog, you know, Santa Monica height. I think they can be like in that, one of those outer layers, you know what I mean? And be like a strong player there. Cause again, not everyone's going to be cranking out 10 out of 10s. Like, that's such a rarity. And nor do they need to. You don't need to, you're not going to have, there's no like idea of the, so that dumb thing that people say who like don't understand sports, they're like, why can't we have a team of all Jordans? Because you fucking can't. Like, do I really have to tell you why that's not going to be possible? And that's fine. You don't need that. You need balance, diversity in creation and thought. And I feel like Days Gone can, or not Days Gone, but Ben can help round that out for PlayStation.
Jake Bakes Cakes writes in and says, "Hey y'all, at the end of the PS5 generation, will you be disappointed if the majority of PlayStation first party published games are multiplayer games or sequels? For new single player IP on PS4, we got Horizon, Ghost of Tsushima, Bloodborne, Until Dawn, The Last Guardian, Neck, Death Stranding, Dreams, Days Gone, and if you want to count it, Spider-Man. On PS5, we currently have Returnal, Destruction All-Stars, and eventually Wolverine. That's it for right now. Yet, we know a shit ton of sequels in multiplayer games. Let me know where you both stand. Thanks for all you do. You two are some of the best gaming has to offer." Jake Bakes Case, you're some of the best gaming has to offer.
Thank you for writing that when Greg's not here.
Oh, yeah. 1,000%. Yeah.
No, yeah, right?
I appreciate that, Jake.
I would say that maybe Jake Bakes Case is the best some cakes have to offer.
You know? You think he's like, he's up there in the cake game? Like,
he's baking the cakes.
Name. It's in the name. Yeah, you're here like, for the cakes were good, but I have
just because cake is in your name doesn't mean you're like in the top five.
That you're kicked out? No, you got cake in the name, like you're probably, you know, you're cooking in there. Especially baking. Like, baking's tough.
That's a science.
Like, yeah.
I love the idea that Jake Bakes Cakes has like a podcast that's Cake I Love You XOXO, and like, he is to cakes what we are to PlayStation.
Yeah, the alternative universe. I'd write into the Jake Bakes Cakes extravaganza. Anyway, would we just want... I wouldn't be. I think it's... natural, right? Like, it wouldn't make sense, as much as I love like new shit, it wouldn't make sense to have franchises like Horizon, Ghost, blah blah, you know, all those like awesome titles, and just say, all right, the end, you know, let's walk away from this great world we've established and like start something new. I think it's natural at this point for them to have a little bit less in the way of new IP. I still definitely want to see it. I would love for us to get one or two on top of what we already have, new franchises that are at that kind of pedigree of the games mentioned, except for Knack, I guess, because no one really fucked with Knack except ironically.
Wow.
But yeah, I think it's natural for, am I wrong?
It's so harsh to Knack. Wait, you're not wrong.
People often so say harsh. I'm mean, but they rarely say I'm wrong. Have you noticed that? It's something I've noticed. But yeah, I think it's natural progression. But what about you? Are you out here hoping that Knack 3 isn't coming down the pipeline, or?
I hope Knack 3 doesn't come out. But when I think for me, I'll be more upset if we weren't getting, like, if we didn't get Horizon 2, if we weren't gonna get Ghost 2, if we weren't gonna get Death Stranding 2 is a whole different thing. But like, if we weren't getting sequels to all these things that they just established, I'd be like, what's going on? Why aren't we seeing the follow-ups to all these games that you like laid the groundwork for, right? Like, I think the PS4 generation for PlayStation Studios was about laying the groundwork, and now it's about following up and having these franchises be franchises and continuing, and while at the same time finding the new franchises to exist, right? Like, I don't think we're going to stop seeing new IP. I think you mentioned Returnal. We got Returnal, right? We're going to get Wolverine. I imagine that, like, it'd be cool to see Housemarque possibly do another new IP. I don't think Returnal 2 is necessarily a given. I think you have room for that there. I think you have room for new IP and something in the multiplayer stuff, right? No multiplayer maybe doesn't get as much excitement from the single player crowd in terms of new and exciting stuff, but I think there's room. We just talked about Ben Studio. I think it's reported. We know that Ben Studio is working on something new.
Yeah.
Or maybe Siphon Filter, who knows? But I would expect something new. I'd expect a new IP. There's going to be room for that.
There was a presentation where they were like sitting and they were like, we got something coming down the pipeline. And,
yeah.
You know, I vaguely remember that. So they're definitely, they got something in the works for sure.
We got a few more questions that we're going to go through. Let's do this question from Maverick Zero, who writes in and says, with Street Fighter VI release coming in a few months, what crossover/guest characters would you like for them to add? I would love to see Kiryu Kazuma from Yakuza or Kiyosuke from Rival Schools.
This is all you. This all is your best. This is a you question. Yeah, take it away.
All right. So first of all, I think it could be cool to see maybe a character, like a crossover character from like Marvel, right? Just to get like the Marvel versus Capcom energy in there. Marvel versus Capcom Infinite was such like a letdown for the audience. And so I think if you want to like win back hearts, maybe maybe save this for later on in the cycle when people wouldn't be weirded out by a fucking weird ass character entering the fray. But like Wolverine being added as a character in Street Fighter VI, I think that would bring back a lot of good faith in terms of, oh shit, Wolverine's back. Oh man, okay, like they're fucking with the Xbox or with the Xbox, with the X-Men characters. Let's fucking go. I can't wait to see what they do with Marvel vs. Capcom, the next one. I think that could be a way to lay that groundwork. And also, Wolverine is just a character that a lot of people love from Marvel vs. Capcom, so I think that could be fun.
Berserker Barrage.
Exactly. Yoshimitsu from Tekken, I think that could be a cool thing to return the favor. Of course, in Tekken 7, you had Akuma as the guest character from Street Fighter in Tekken. Tekken 7, I think, yeah, to return the favor, Yoshimitsu is a character that you'll see make crossovers here and there. Like, Yoshimitsu was also in Soul Calibur as well. And so, yeah, I think getting Yoshimitsu in Street Fighter would be entertaining and fun. And that's the kind of character that you don't already have in Street Fighter. Because I was also thinking, like, okay, what if you got Jack in there? Or what if you got, like, you know, other Law or somebody? But Street Fighter already has so many bases covered in terms of the archetypes. And I don't think there's, like, a Yoshimitsu in Street Fighter. So I think that would be a fun one. And then my final answer for this one would be Axel Low from Guilty Gear Strive. And that's just personal. This is me playing favoritism. I fucking love that character in Guilty Gear Strive. And one also, I think having in, like, the Capcom Arc System Works connection could be exciting. I think that could be cool, since Arc System Works is so big in fighting games, and they've been the ones that have been, like, carrying the scene on their back for, like, a lot of the cool technical 2D fighters. And to have, like, that make an appearance in Street Fighter could be really special. And Axel Low, I think, in terms of the long range aspects of his moveset, would fit really well in Street Fighter. Like, I would think of him as a Dalzim, but even a more fast paced Dalzim and a more precise Dalzim. I think that could be pretty fun. Next question comes from Sky Walkup, who says, a moment in gaming that will always stick with me is the start of Act 3 of Ghost of Tsushima. Sky Walkup then described it, but I edited this out because I don't want to spoil Ghost of Tsushima for people. But what is a moment in PlayStation, in a PlayStation game, that will stick with you forever? Janet Garcia.
For me, I mean, it's tough because it's like, I don't always have the distance to know this with some of these titles, especially the ones that came to mind were like more recently played ones. But for me, without getting into spoilers for Last of Us 2, after, you know, early on, there's like, you know, the one of the big moments that happens in the game. And then it's like the classic, all right, like, you know, grab, I don't know, a fucking notebook and then meet me downstairs when you're ready. And you get this time to like walk around, you know, the house, and you can look at like the picture frames and, you know, the watch and all these different like aspects that are around. And there's this, a weight of, I think, like loss and an emptiness. And again, I'm keep using the word intimacy, but like a really intimate moment to that scene. It's slow, it's at your own pace. And you know, I'm sure there are people that played it and they're like, I just fucking got my shit and then I dipped out of there, you know? Like, there are people that are a little bit more gameplay centric, wanting to move the things forward. But I feel like that was such a good mashup of having like a really big moment and sort of giving that moment as much space to breathe as you want it to. It kind of reminds me of like, was it, you know, you kind of had that a bit in like Life is Strange, like I think it was the first one, where there's a scene where you're like on the bed and you're listening to, I think it's like Death Cab for Cutie or some shit, like something like the Life is Strange brand music. And it sort of just pans around and you as the player get to pick when you get up and kind of, you know, it's that classic like feet touch the ground, you're back in reality, you're like opting to return to what life is now after this moment. And I think that was so well done and cool. And like, some of my favorite aspects of the Last of Us franchise in general are the more sim elements of it, you know, the like walking around, the getting the materials and you're crafting, you're slowly walking. And you know, I spent so much time in that franchise just besides the fact that I was, I think, writing the guide for the second one, so I was like, okay, I really gotta know this area so I can describe it to people. But you know, even just playing for fun, like walking around and noting the coffee shop that's there and the laundromat and what's written on the board and sometimes related to the puzzle and it's not. So for me, that Last of Us 2 scene hits really hard, even though it's not like a cutscene or anything. It's just kind of a moment that you can opt into. Lots of cool stuff from Last of Us 2 that pop out. You know, the red lighting for Ellie's face when you like see her do this like crazy takedown and shit. And the Horizon Tall Neck stuff, just because it looks beautiful. It's very grandiose. I think it's very well scripted. So both like a few key scripted moments and then a few things that just hit for me because I was really in it at the time and just feeling like getting space to cement that memory, I think, is what Last of Us 2 did with that house moment after, like, that first kind of, I wouldn't call it the act, because I don't know what days, the fucking order of the days and shit, but that's mine. What about you?
Mine also involves the Last of Us moment. Sam and Henry in the Last of Us 1 was such, well, the first time I played that moment was such a, like, it hit me, right? Like, that shit blew me away in terms of, oh, I did not see that coming, and damn, like, this hurts to watch. Like, this hurts to know that, like, this moment just happened. That caught me so off guard the first time I experienced that. And I think that moment will always stick with me in terms of, damn, that wowed me. But also, the end of Metal Gear Solid 3 is another special one. Like, Metal Gear Solid 3, just in general, throughout that game, has so many moments. But the end of it, where you are fighting the final boss, that is such a well, I guess, placed boss fight in terms of the set dressing and how it looks and how everything swells together. I thought that was really special. And then also the end boss fight, like the finding the end, right? The boss that's named the end. That was another moment for me that was really special. And then one more is, but with keeping it vague, I'll just say the horse moment in Shadow Colossus.
I feel like even I know what that is, and I haven't played the game. Maybe yeah. It's one reason I want to finish it, because I already know like where it goes. So
but
like,
okay. Dude, when I played that back in the day, I was like, dude, this hurt. I didn't realize how much I cared about this.
People do talk about that like all the time. It's probably one of the most iconic moments in gaming. Real quick, too, before we move on to the next one, I do want to shout out just the openings of some games. I think when you either play a game a lot over and over again, or it was just maybe really impactful to you, it really sticks in your mind. So for like older ones, the opening to MGS2 with like being on the bridge, seeing the rain, at the time, the graphical fidelity to me was unreal. And looking back, I'm like, this doesn't look that good, because it was like a, you know, PS2 or whatever. But I remember seeing that, the smoking the cigarette, tossing it in the rain, like it being such a cool, moody, cinematic moment. And because I played Jack and Daxter really often, especially the first one, I replay that game pretty regularly. While I don't have it perfectly down, like the opening monologue sticks in my mind, you know, like for years we've searched, you know, I've asked the rocks, but the rocks do not recall, you know, even the rocks do not recall, for the answers lie on the shoulders of a young boy oblivious to, you know. And just I think too, like the voice acting of that game is so iconic and cartoony and over the top that, you know, that lead in on the boat where Samus is like, you know, or the sage is like, it ends with like not a, like many stories, this begins with a simple act of disobedience. Like they were just kind of in their bag when they wrote that shit. So like, while I don't have it perfectly memorized yet, like hearing that over and over again, it's like one of my favorite scenes in gaming, just to like hear that monologue play.
Janet, I got two more questions I want to throw at you. But before we get there, I want to let people know about patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. Over on patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, you can go and get the show ad-free. And speaking of ads, let us tell you about our sponsors.
Shout out to Honey for sponsoring this episode. Honey is the easy way to save when shopping on your iPhone or computer. Thanks to Honey, manually searching for coupon codes is a thing of the past. And we all know there's nothing better than the feeling of saving money. Honey's the free shopping tool that scours the internet for promo codes and applies the best one it finds to your cart. Here's how it works. Imagine you're shopping on one of your favorite sites. When you check out, the Honey button appears, and all you have to do is click apply coupons. You wait a few seconds as the Honey guy dances. It searches for coupons it can find for the site. And if it finds a working coupon, you will watch the prices drop. We here at Kinda Funny have been using Honey for years, and it has literally saved us thousands on tech, costumes, food, you name it. Honestly, I just love how easy it is to set, forget, and save. Honey doesn't just work on desktops. It also works on your iPhone. You just activate it on Safari on your phone, save on the go. And if you don't already have Honey, you could be straight up missing out. By getting it, you'll be doing yourself a solid and supporting this show. You can get PayPal Honey for free at joinhoney.com/kindoffunny. That's joinhoney.com/kindoffunny. Shout out to Rocket Money for sponsoring this episode. We all love gobbling up content, and we have an understanding of what subscriptions we use. Or do we? Do you know how much your subscriptions really cost? Most Americans think they spend around $80 a month on subscriptions, when the actual total is closer to $200. That's right. You out there, you could be wasting hundreds of dollars each month on subscriptions you don't even know about. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending, and it helps you lower your bills, all in one place. Rocket Money has saved some of us here at Kinda Funny a ton of money, and it can help you too. Stop throwing away your money. Cancel unwanted subscriptions and manage your expenses the easy way by going to rocketmoney.com/kindoffunny. That's rocketmoney.com/kindoffunny. rocketmoney.com/kindoffunny.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
All right, Janet, we're back. I want to do this question from David Robinson, who writes in to kindoffunny.com/KFGD and says, what is a trope in games that you dislike, and how would you change it so that it's still a commonly used theme slash mechanic, etc., but to your preference? Janet, is there a trope in games that you dislike?
A mechanical trope? Going underwater when you're not an underwater game. I think if you're not an underwater game, stay clear. You can have swimming because it's annoying to just like instant die. It feels very dated. But don't be all up in the water. It's only ever okay at best. Like Mario Odyssey, that's like one of the weaker areas. Horizon, I feel like it's not my favorite. You know, Stealth Kelp, what is that? I never bought it. They should stop selling it. But something that could accomplish the same thing. I don't know. I just don't go underwater. I'm trying to think of what is being underwater accomplished that you can't do on land. Mm. I guess maybe weaving through tunnels. Maybe have more air stuff. Let's fly a little bit more. Flying's like swimming of the sea of the sky. You know.
Flying is the swimming of the sky.
Yeah. Yes. So I think we should take to the skies. You know. Shasta Tears of the Kingdom coming out. That's what Link's doing. He's taking those guys. And I think we should all follow him up there because that's where it's at. Mm.
Is your problem with underwater stuff is that it's sluggish and controlling it can often be whack? Because like, does putting it in the sky fix that?
I guess it helps.
Sky stuff can be faster, I guess.
Yeah.
Because I think there's a lot of issues with being underwater. It is more naturally sluggish. It's slower. And it usually feels like there's a layer of bad tedium. Because I think especially when you're going underwater, you know, I think tedium has its place when it makes sense with what you're doing and when it's slightly on your own terms. So like when I discuss the tedium of The Last of Us that I really like, that's very opted in. You know, you can kind of just quickly go and you don't have to look at the freaking fake Starbucks I have and all that. You know, you do have to scavenge, but that's kind of it. Underwater, it's like you're stuck there, it's slow, like especially like in Horizon, like the combat doesn't really translate. I mean, they do have the which is in the trailer, so it's not a spoiler, the flying machine that can go under. Again, their solution, they're like, what if we flew underwater? And that's how they're just trying to like, you know, gloss it over. So yeah, the water bird's definitely a good solution. I'm sure there's a narrative themes that I could think of, but I can't quite grab any off the top of my head. But mechanically, the water thing.
Do you think there would be a hullabaloo if Horizon 3 didn't have underwater stuff? If they're like, oh man, this didn't work, we're just not gonna do it, and like the game comes out and people are like, wait, what about underwater? This game's a step back.
I think they could keep obviously there's an element of hunting that involves water because the fish are in the water, so you have to go there to get them. But there's also the caves I was kind of fine with because you're sort of weaving and exploring. I guess you can leave the underwater caves in there. I didn't really have a big beef with that. Also, what's nice about the underwater caves is you'd be underwater, but then you'd get up to like actually battle things. Yeah. And the idea of like a monster that can, or a machine that can be in the water and then come on land is still cool. So there's still water in the world, but like, you know, Horizon 1 had aspects of that, just not to the same degree. But the idea of like, I'm going deep in there and I'm trying to find this thing and whatever. Mm-hmm. And Horizon didn't dip too far into the water stuff, which is why I think it didn't like mess with the game, because often when you were in the water, they're like, and then we drain the town and it's all good, and you're back on land because no one wants to be underwater. Let's just remove the whole thing and leave it to the wayside. But what about you? What would you nix and fix from gaming?
One thing that's becoming a bigger and bigger pet peeve for me is drawn out onboarding. Like, why, when a game has a tutorial that takes forever to go through, right? And it is like, it's not even you like ushering me through story stuff or just prompts on a screen where it is, all right, we're going to teach you how to play the game, and it forces you to do that. Or games that, I think now with like online like live service stuff or Battle Pass games, now you'll see a lot of games be like, all right, do these test matches, like that'll teach you how to play the game before you get into the real thing. And I'm like, dude, I did a preview of this game 2 months ago, and this is a very specific use case, but like, you know, I played this game at my friend's house 2 months ago. Like, it could be something like that, right? Like, I know how to play this game. I don't need to spend the first 40 minutes of me playing this thing, relearning how to play it, when all I want to do is sit down and immediately play with my friends. Like, my friends will tell me this shit. Like, I don't need to relearn how to play these games. I think any game that that is thinking about doing that, like forced onboarding, should have a menu item in the main menu that just says tutorial if I really want to sit and learn those mechanics. Or if you're a single player game, make it part of the story. Make it part of, like, you know, give me the prompts the first time you want me to attack something that says square to attack. You know, like, make it part of the experience. Don't halt my enjoyment because you want to make sure that I know something for sure. I think making that stuff more natural is way better, because I get more frustrated when I feel like my time is being wasted and the game is like, oh no, but here's how you pick up collectibles. Come over here.
Yeah.
Press triangle.
I agree, especially the multiplayer thing. Like, I remember it wasn't as egregious, but us having the same thing when we played, what was that, like, Arcadegeddon?
Yeah.
Yeah. Arcadegeddon's a big the red flag on this one for Arcadegeddon. It wasn't as bad as other games, but it did have the nothing's worse, and that's why, like, one of the most popular searches, so, like, if y'all write guides out there, add this to your repertoire if you haven't already, is how to play, like, online, how to play multiplayer co-op, which I know it's dumb to say multiplayer co-op, but that's just how people Google it, so you should probably write it that way. But it's because it's so often, like, that question of, well, can I do it now? Do I have to first do these other things? And if I have, it's like, you have to do, like, you pre-prepare to game. And I feel like that definitely zaps some of the fun out of it. I think from a single player example or use case too, one thing I've liked for onboarding for more complex systems is the, either someone teaches you in the world or you're teaching someone. Like, I thought, again, not to fucking kiss Horizon's ass all the time, but, like, I thought Horizon did that well with having it be, oh, let me know how to do this. And it's just a tutorial, but it's like, narratively, it's like you're teaching it and you're in the action. Something else I've enjoyed seeing, which Horizon does this, I know, I'm sure other games do it as well, is sort of more, I don't know the right word for it, but kind of responsive to UI implementation for tips. Like, one thing I've noticed playing, like, the DLC for Burning Shores is that it'll, like, I'll be doing an action and it'll give me, like, a little tip will pop up that'll be like, hey, like, it's related to, like, what I'm doing. So, like, targeting armor isn't gonna, like, be as effective, but if you knock the armor off, like, it will be effective, so it'll take multiple shots, you know. And again, like, I don't necessarily need that information, but it could point to, like, we've all had those moments gaming where you realize, oh my god, you can do it this way, I've been doing it this other way the whole time, like, I wish I knew this. And the idea that through design and through UI, a game can be responsive enough to relay the information to you as you're playing is really cool. And I hope to see more implementation of that. And also, you know, PlayStation has a bunch of shit going on with the cards and all that. So I think there's always room for more guide-esque options baked into the game by design to, you know, remove the need to seek ancillary stuff or sit in tutorials for hours.
Yeah, I 1000% agree. And also, I think there is just an element of, feel free to trust the player. This is me going back to the multiplayer stuff where, you know, I had played a little bit of the beta for Exo Primal, like a month ago or so. And that game starts off with a tutorial, right? And, like, I'm playing through the tutorial, like, obviously, cool, I don't know how to play this game, so yeah, sure, teach me. But also, like, playing through it, once I got through the tutorial, I'm like, I could have figured this stuff out. One thing I appreciate about when I played the Overwatch beta years and years ago, back in 2016, is, like, that game has, like, had a practice option where you can go into the shooting range and test shit out. But the game really is just like, all right, like, you boot up, you're in the main menu, start a match, play, and it's a simple game. Like, it's a first-person shooter that's objective-based, and, like, I hadn't pushed a payload before. I did in that first match, and I was like, oh, I get how to play this game, right? Like, I think there's something there in terms of just trust the player. Like, they'll get through it.
I'm laughing because I'm thinking about how bad I am at Overwatch 2 and how much I don't know what's going on. I'm just, they did this shit for people like me where I don't know what the fuck's going on. But that's different thing, because I lack some of the deeper understanding of how to, like, you know, that's not really the game's fault. It's like, I know what I need to do, but, like, how do I make this fun and interesting?
Yeah,
like, you know, like, and that's the barrier that I had in that. But I did appreciate that it had that split where I did go into the little training range things and do the little, like, you can also do some, like, CPU based matches and stuff. Like, they do have resources there, which I think are nice to have for folks that need it, but also cool that you can just jump in, especially with it being a sequel to a game like that.
I'm also just impatient is what I'm realizing, and I think just comes with, like, you know, we get access to a lot of games, right? I think with Game Pass, with PS Plus, people in general are getting access to more and more games. If I've been waiting, like, 2 years for this game that I'm really looking forward to, and I'm like, dude, I can't wait to get my hands on the sticks and fucking bash some enemies' heads in, and I pick up the controller and they're like, here's 30 minutes before you can do anything. I'm like, oh, God damn it. All right, fine. Like, I'll stick through the story stuff so I can, like, fucking fight this bokoblin that I want to fight. You know what I mean? But, hey, it is what it is. Janet, I got just one more question for you to close this thing out, and I wanted to end with a spicy question. This comes from Ro, who writes in and says, what do you think is the most overrated PlayStation game?
Man, okay. I mean, maybe... you know... maybe Shadow of the Colossus. But
I thought you were going to say Uncharted. People, how dare you say Shadow of the Colossus?
I was thinking about saying Uncharted, but Uncharted is good. I mean, I think it is higher rated than it should be. I'm trying to think if there's something more. It might be Uncharted. I feel like it's such a boring answer because we've talked about that like at length. But it might be just for the... But is the gap really that big? Yeah, I think the gap's probably at least a little bit big enough because people talk about that like it's like the greatest thing ever. And it's really good. Maybe even great. But I don't think it's, you know, moving the needle as much as... It well, maybe it moved the needle, but like it existing now isn't as interesting as it existing then, I think. But I'm trying to think if there's anything else that kind of falls into that category. It really might just be those two, where it's like the people that love it really love it and are like, how dare you? And the people that don't are like, actually, I dare. Those are the two that come to mind. But what about you? Is there anything that feels more poignant for this kind of thing?
Not that comes to mind. Like, this is one I struggle with a little bit in terms of overrated, because I feel like it's kind of a loaded word in terms of, can something be overrated, right? Like, if a lot of people love it, then a lot of people love it, right? Like, it's more so I'm just in the minority of things. I think the original Uncharted trilogy a little bit. Like, I play through those games and I'm like, these are great games, but they never struck me as special.
I think that's a better way to zero in, because I do think four felt like four, we finally
for me,
got there.
Yeah, four
we
convinced
finally
me.
Yes, like the idea is finally all clear. And I might still not maybe rate it quite as high as other people do, but four was like after three games, which, you know, that's how progress works. After three, it's like we finally did what we were doing the whole time, but it actually like worked better, even though it is a bit too long, I think. But yeah, I would agree with that, with the main trilogy being the bigger answer to this rather than four. And again, I haven't played Lost Legacy yet, but I heard it's really good.
I like... Part of me was considering doing God of War, but like I can't bring myself to say God of War. Like I think I love God of War.
I mean,
right?
God of War is really good.
Like I gave that game a 5 out of 5, and every time I think about the special moments of Ragnarok, I'm like, nah, I can't call it overrated. But I think God of War 2018, when I replayed that game, I was like, I might not love this game as much as I originally thought, but I still love it. You know, like when I go back the second time and I already know what's happening, I'm already like filled in on the story. The moment to moment gameplay of God of War for me doesn't strike me as special as like as I originally conceived. But like even going into Ragnarok, I still had some of those same things, but the overall package is so fucking good that like it still works for me. It still comes down as no, this is still a masterpiece, and so I can't commit to God of War with that one.
A slightly, I mean, it's not a deep cut because people know this fucking game, but just in terms of what you think of for overrated, Detroit Become Human, it might be overrated, you know, because I played this and I was like, this is so good, like, it's so, like, beautiful, like, the stuff they did with music in this game fucking hits super hard. They, like, had different composers for each of the characters, like, it goes deep. But when you really look at it, it's like... It reminds me of that, there's like this like TikTok audio going around of like, now that I look at it, this bitch is kind of ugly. It's,
damn,
that's
trying
to become human low key, because it's a really head ass story. Like it's very, it kind of reminds me of like, and I haven't rewatched Crash.
Is it that every David Cage game?
Yeah, I was gonna say, Heavy Rain is probably the real answer now that I think about it. Cause like I fucking loved Heavy Rain when I played it originally. And then like, as time separates from it, I'm like, was that game good or was it just unique?
This game's kind of like, it's weird cause like, I do think, just purely in terms of like the choice mechanic and the way the narrative branches, incredible. There are some scenes here that I think are really amazing. However, like when you really, and I knew this when I played it because I didn't play it like right when it came out, but I was like, some of what it's saying with this, like, I don't know about this rioter race storyline. And then it's got a lot of head assery, which again, that is kind of David Cage's bag. So it makes sense that this happened. But like the more that I get away from Detroit Become Human, the more it's like, I don't know if I'd really recommend it because I don't want someone thinking I'm head ass. You know what I mean? Like I'm going down by association recommending Detroit Become Human to somebody. So this might be the most overrated PlayStation game.
But like, here's
in
the
that
thing.
Sense.
I feel like Detroit Become Human, it may be overrated in the sense that like, I don't know. I feel like Detroit Become Human is divided in terms of how people feel about it. Because I think there's a lot of people that are like, no, like, this sucks. Like, no, we're not, this story sucks. And then there's, like, the other side of people that are like, oh, that's pretty good. No, I enjoy this thing. But I don't know anybody that's like, fantastic. They knocked it out the park. Like,
I think at the time, though, it was that.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I feel like it had, like, what's the... I don't know if you can look up the Metacritic right now on like what this
That's
sits
a good
at,
question,
but I feel like it sits pretty high. And I just think at the time, it kind of reminds me of like, and I haven't rewatched this, but my brother told me that the movie Crash, he's like, you know how like when Crash came out, everyone was like, holy shit, like this changed how I think about society and race and all this stuff. And then he's like, I watched it the other day and like this movie is so basic and dumb at parts, and like it's not nearly as the, and kind of the same thing with Cloud Atlas. Like, I loved Cloud Atlas when I first watched it, you know, the movie based on the book, and I was like, wow, this is so cool. And then I showed Isaiah it and I was like, actually, this is kind of like, it's kind of rudimentary now I look at it, and I feel like that's where Detroit Become Human kind of ends up landing.
Crash is like such a good comparison. I never thought about that comparison, because yeah, I watched Crash and high school, I think I watched it in like a film class in high school or something, and then like I finished that movie and I was like, wow, it's deep. That's wild.
Yes.
And then like time passes and I'm like, was that movie good or was I just in high school? And like I hadn't like watched a movie like that before. Detroit though, like I might need to replay Detroit to confirm my feelings on it, because I liked it. I like Detroit a lot.
Please clue me in if you do. I like Detroit so much stuff.
Maybe this will be it sucks because there's not an occasion to replay Detroit. Like, what, the next Quantic Dream game is probably coming out 30 years from now and it'll finally be Star Wars Eclipse. But like, you know, like I enjoyed Detroit Become Human more so just for the choice based gameplay and yes. for my guy Connor. Like, Connor for me carried that game. That was like the cop detective robot.
You know, when you say ACAB, it includes Connor.
No,
I hate to tell you.
Don't put Connor
I hate
in
to
that.
Tell
you. Unfortunately, that does include him. God, I will say, Bless, do you want to know when the fifth year anniversary of that game is?
Detroit?
Yeah.
Oh, that's coming up, isn't it?
1 month from today.
Jesus, I mean, that might be the five-year
anniversary.
Someone, someone, fly me out or drive me out to SF, because I really want to like just front to back. Let's just marathon this, knock this out, you and me, and dig into the weeds here, because there's so much to unpack, and I've had no reason to unpack it. Also, shout to Detroit coming out like the narratively, like when did this happen? It says Detroit 2038, so we're like not that far away from this being our reality. Just so you know, heads up, words of the wise. But Detroit Become Human is problematic fave for me. That's the thing.
Yeah, that's the thing. As I played that game, there were so many moments where I was like, oh, this is not good. Oh, man, this is weird. Why are all these androids singing? Why are we doing a Martin Luther King march in this thing? Like,
and then
no,
it's
we
like,
should not
oh,
be doing
this.
Oh,
the android who's, oh, he's black, but he's not black because when you take off his skin, he's just a robot. Like, there's so much shit here.
But then you get to my guy Connor, and he's just this cool dude. Or he's a cop,
I do fuck with Connor.
Still.
But then, yeah, you just, I do fuck with Connor, though,
but,
too.
But like, his gameplay is so fun, and I liked his detective stuff, and he has a good spirit.
One of the best moments in that game was like a Connor moment for me, which I don't want to spoil. Also, I don't even know if you saw that moment because we had different paths. Anyway,
I'm down for the
here
replay.
To unpack. Yes. Oh my God. I'll tune in if I can't be there, but I feel like there's a lot within me for this game. This might be the most overrated PlayStation game. I don't know, but there we go. Detroit Become Human. Didn't expect to talk about that today, but
I didn't think the topic of the show would be ending on Detroit Become Human, but here we are. Let's talk about this week in PlayStation. I want to talk about Horizon, right? What are our biggest desires for the future of Horizon? This last week, Horizon 3 has been officially confirmed in some essence. This is from Anthony Wood at IGN. Guerrilla Games appears to have quietly announced a Horizon Forbidden West sequel while detailing a management reshuffle on its website. Quote, We have full confidence in our leadership as they steer Guerrilla towards a bright future, expanding the world of Horizon with Aloy's next adventure and our exciting online project, read a post spotted by Eurogamer announcing the departure of veteran studio director Angie Smets. Smets has been promoted to head of development strategy at PlayStation Studios following a near 20-year stint at Guerrilla Games. Future Horizon games will now be developed under the leadership of co-studio directors Joel Eschler, Hella Schmidt, and Jan Bart Van Beek. Janet, when you think about the future of Horizon, when you think about Horizon 3, what would you say is your one biggest desire for it?
Ooh, man, to only have one? I guess I would say a more emotional angle for Aloy and her journey, which we've seen a little bit through Burning Shores. You know, we kind of talked about that during the review where you kind of took us through, you know, everything that kind of does and how it really builds on the base of Horizon Forbidden West. But yeah, I mean, I had a big list I went through with Mike on our episode of Games Daily when this story broke. So definitely check that out if you want me to go really in the weeds on like little mechanical things I want. But I think that's probably like the biggest gap that Horizon is kind of facing right now. And I already talked about my water issues earlier in the show, but what about you? What are you hoping for this next iteration?
I'm hoping to see more of the spirit of what we got in Burning Shores in terms of characters. And like, I loved Seika in Burning Shores so much. I want to see more characters like that, right? More characters that feel like they have a genuine connection with Aloy, and they're able to bounce back off of Aloy, and Aloy is able to kind of like have these equals that she's able to talk to and more interesting ways, right? Like, I think that was such a great a great introduction of a character. And also, like, Burning Shores just added a lot in terms of what it looks like when you have a map that is built for the PS5, and then also you have this ability to fly through the map with the water wing, and like, you know, the way that they divided that map up for that, I thought worked really well. So I think thinking about those elements, thinking about how you can switch things up from Horizon Forbidden West into Horizon 3, it could be cool. But yeah, I also just don't want them to change a lot, weirdly enough. Like, I enjoyed Horizon Forbidden West so much, and I think they have a bag here. I don't need them to turn the game into Breath of the Wild or anything too weird or crazy. Like, I mean, give me more of what you've given me and just iterate. Like, iterate in ways that, like, look at the feedback you've gotten for Horizon Forbidden West, look at the feedback that you've gotten for the franchise, and tweak those things, polish those things up, and then round out the trilogy. For me, I'm good with that. Before we get out of here, I do want to shout out our PS Plus games. The PS Plus monthly games for May are Grid Legends, Chivalry 2, and Descenders. And then for a quick PlayStation picks, right, let's talk about the drop this week.
Picks.
We got After Image for PS5 and PS4. We got Strayed Lights for PS5 and PS4. We got Kaizuna AI, Touch the Beat for PS4 and PSVR. We got Live Alive for PS5 and PS4. We got Monster Hunter Rise, Sunbreak for PS5 and PS4. And we got Star Wars Jedi Survivor for PS5. Of course, I've just been playing Star Wars Jedi Survivor for PlayStation Picks, and so you should go check out the Kinda Funny Games cast where we do our full review of Jedi Survivor, where Greg gives it the official Kinda Funny review score, and then we all give our thoughts on the game. But Janet, that's been it for PS I Love You XOXO. Remember, this has been the show, your weekly PlayStation podcast that you can watch live right here on patreon.com/kindoffunnygames or later on podcast services around the globe. Until next time, it's been our pleasure to serve you.